the buzzer, McCord on its way.
Oh my goodness!
They have to get it. With no timeouts, they do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Hey, it's the world's greatest podcast. It's Dan Dokic here with you and the great Seth Greenberg, the coach whisperer, the walker of Jake the Wonder Dog, the purveyor of all things in the world, and one of the best girl dads in the history of the world. Seth, it's question time. I got questions for you. You got answers. You ready?
Here we go.
Tom Izzo, very, 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 very good offseason to this point in recruiting. Has anybody had a better offseason to this point than Tom Izzo?
Maybe Baylor. They've signed two top 20 guys already, if I'm not mistaken, which is, and they got a top five guy, first top five guy they got since Isaiah Austin. So, but Izzo's, he's crushed it. And, you know what the funny thing is? Like Tom Izzo coaches his team hard. Tom Izzo's demanding. Tom Izzo, people, either you're going to buy in and like him or you're not going to like him. And you know what shows? Dudes want to be coached. Like, his guys get better. His guys get ready for the league. His guys win. They compete for championships. They compete for league championships. And that works. And he's real. Like, he hasn't changed. You've known him for a long time. I've known him forever. He has not changed from the guy that was graduate assistant for Judd Heathcote back when they were playing in Jamerson.
Yeah, yeah. What other teams have had great off seasons? Now, here's the reason I say Izzo to this point. Because if Tillman and Henry don't come back, then I don't know that it's so great. It's not bad, but I don't know that it's so great.
Oh, you're talking about guys that are coming back. All right.
No, I'm just talking about between guys coming back and who they've recruited. I think Baylor's a great answer to that. I think Ohio State's had a great recruiting class. Yeah, but they're going to lose Caleb Wesson, and they lost Luther Muhammad. So maybe, you know, it's addition by subtraction in one maybe. But I was thinking today, like Memphis. Memphis was supposed to be last year, was supposed to be Memphis. Didn't happen. But they've regrouped a bit. They got to be in the list. Who else is in the list of teams that have had really good off seasons?
I think UConn's had a great off season. Like, I think UConn's going to roll into the Big East and be in really, really good shape. They have their core unit back. They didn't lose anyone. The Boatwright kid is absolutely phenomenal. They had a kid sitting out, Springer and Cole. They are legit. I think Villanova, you know, because the Robinson Earl is coming back. I mean, like, here's another example of those guys. They got old and they're staying old. They've got senior leadership in Colin Gillespie. They got really, really talented players. You know, I understand they lost Sadiq Bey. But they have enough coming back of young, talented sophomores that got a lot of minutes with another good recruiting class that they're going to be legit again.
Florida lost Nembhard. Is that a fatal loss to Florida? Are they one of the teams that you'd say had a bad offseason?
Well, here's the thing with Florida is I think last year was a unique learning experience for Mike White. And what I'm saying by that is everyone thinks you got quote-unquote one-and-done dudes. And all of a sudden, that equates to winning. I always say, if you got one and done, you're done. He had some guys that thought they were one and done. They weren't. Because you know what? It's an exclusive club. We say it every single week. And I think that Nembhard will hurt because he's invested a lot in Nembhard. A two-year starter, big guard, played for the Canadian Olympic team. They got Kenyatta Johnson back, who I think is really, really
good. Does Okoro leaving Auburn, does that surprise, number one? Did they recruit him as a potential one and done? And number two, which list are they on? Better, good, bad? What did they have in the offseason, Bruce Pearl's squad?
Yeah, you know, I think that they did not – I didn't see him as a one and done, and they talk about lottery pick for him. Now, I just don't know if you can be a lottery pick and not shoot it. The way the NBA is now, if you can't make shots, I mean, can you be – you could be a lottery pick. Can you be in the top six or seven? I don't know. Bruce has had a good year. I mean, he's got a good recruiting class coming in. I'm not exactly sure who he had sitting out. I think what's happened with Bruce right now is, and it sounds silly, those guys just expect to win. And they're all bought in. And he's gotten his type of guys. And whatever that is, like, Okoro is a perfect example. Hard playing, tough guys, physical guys that are going to buy into roles compete like hell. I don't think they're going anywhere. Tennessee's had a good non-conference.
Yeah.
Let's just see what happens. Like, I see all these write-ups on Pons, and I've watched him play a lot. I know he can guard any position, and that's great. And I know that he's super uber-athletic. But he's another guy that can't make a shot. So, I mean, if he gets Pons back, I think Tennessee is really, really good. I mean,
all right.
Really, really good.
Matt Painter came on my show, and, you know, he made national news by ripping two guys, Eastern and Harms, for leaving. And that all sounds good in April, right? So looking, they had pretty good recruit, really good, actually, couple recruits. But looking at Purdue, losing those two guys, would you say bad, good, indifferent? Where are they in the offseason?
Look, I think you have a hard time replacing – guys that have been in the program that long, that kind of played their roles. I mean, no Joe Eastern, he could play, you know, guard point guard to power forwards. He could rebound a little bit. He could defend. Harms ran. He was a little goofy. But let's face it, I mean, they won a lot of games with those two guys. And those guys played a lot of minutes. So how do you replace their experience? How do you place their understanding of the Big Ten and what it means each and every day to play? How do you replace Harms' shot blocking or Eastern's versatility? Now, you know their roster better than I do. I still don't think you replace them with freshmen.
No, I think they had a nice recruiting class. Big Kid Williams, but I think they're on the bad end. Wichita State early seemed like they were losing everybody, Seth.
And that's overrated.
The hardest in this offseason?
Yeah, they lost a lot of guys, but then they also picked up bounce back guys. So that's the thing. It's like secular. Like, all right, you get, you know, you're going to lose a couple guys, so you know what you're going to do? You're going to take a couple guys from someone else. So, like, they still have guys. Like, here's the thing about Wichita State. They still have pieces that were productive returning. They had duplicate pieces, and I think what happens is the guys that think they're the odd man out, they leave.
Well, let me ask you this, because even going back, I was out of it a few years before you, but even going back to when you were out of it, the kids transferring, fan bases would say, uh-oh, there's something wrong with the program. Uh-oh, what's going on internally? Well, now kids transfer. Do you think not only fans, but athletic directors and administration look differently at transfers now than they did, you know, say 10 years ago?
I think transfers are part of the culture of college basketball now. And I think that it's more accepted. I think it's more understood. It's not a red flag anymore. You see guys that are scoring points and have decent roles that are transferring. And you know what? The reason they're transfers, they want a bigger role. They want more shots. And because there's so much static around a good player right now. I think administrations look at it as saying, well, you know, eventually, once every 3 or 4 years, we're going to get hit. And we're going to get hit hard, and we got to deal with it. Now, here's the deal. If that guy is on a contract year, if that guy, quote unquote, is on the hot seat, and that happens, it's a major problem. So I think it all depends on where you are in terms of your credibility within your athletic administration, where you are in terms of, I used to say 1 year buys you 2 years as a coach. In other words, you get the NCAA tournament, it buys you 2 years. Now I think if you get the NCAA tournament, it buys you 1 year. Now, in that second year, if you got a bunch of transfers, if you are not established, if you're not a guy that administration is all in on, it becomes more difficult. There's no doubt about it. But I think it is 100% just part of the culture and the DNA or the way college athletics is today.
I'm going to give you my take, and then I want your take. My take on this whole Marlins, and as it relates to college basketball, my take on this whole Marlins pandemic outbreak and all that is this. I think you have to be very careful as a sport when this happens. I think you have to make sure and know that you have to know the most of anybody in the building. However, I do think this, Seth, I do think this is an interesting learning opportunity for college basketball and college football to see if they can go. Baseball prepared. They have a 30-man they have a 30-man eligible roster. We're not going to have the chance to prepare that. But I think seeing how the PGA Tour kept playing through this and seeing what Major League Baseball does here. And I hope personally, if the science is right, if the science is wrong, shut it down. But if the science is right, then keep playing. But I think this is a hell of a time right now to learn from what's happening in baseball and use it for college basketball, college football. And don't get me wrong, they're not the same sport. But this is data that can be used to either shut it down or to play through when college kids do test positive for corona. That's my thought. What is yours?
Well, let me ask you a question. Where are you on the side while these professional athletes, they're getting paid to come back and they're getting paid to put themselves at risk? Where are you in that conversation?
I believe that they are, but I also don't believe they should be used as petri dishes or guinea pigs. I don't think anybody should be. I think you have to know the risks. I do think college is entirely, totally different. And I'm saying that as loudly as I can. It's totally different. But what I'm also saying is, all right, now you have a number of guys on a team that are positive. What happens here? What's the science say? Science say you should shut it down? Does the science say, no, they're healthy. You planned for this. Bring up the, I don't know. But I know this is a time that if I'm Mark Emmert or whoever runs football, I'm really paying attention to what happens here with this baseball. I want to know why they chose to continue playing, but I also would want to know why they chose not to. And I think it's interesting.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I think, first of all, we've got to establish protocols. And the protocols, I think, are going to continually change because it's going to change with the science. It's going to change with the information that we're gathering. So I think that, like, for example, the TBT, their protocol was buttoned down. Tested before, tested when you arrive. If there's another positive test, once the team came together, all right, that team was eliminated. Someone came out of the bullpen, right? That fit the 11-day model, all right? So now you've got Major League Baseball, all right? Major League Baseball, all right? They expanded their rosters, all right? They are traveling. I think a bigger question is for sport. This is challenging discipline. What kind of team are you? All right. What kind of decisions are you going to make when you're not with your team? Like, I think when teams are together, I think that, like I always say, I say that the safest place for a college athlete to be is on campus because every campus facility is absolutely scrubbed down. You've got the best medical care.
Can I interrupt you there?
Yeah.
I want to discuss that. Just talk to a guy. 15 guys on a basketball team. I'm not going to say what team. 7 tested positive for corona. They all tested negative when they got to campus. There's 2 different campuses, Seth. There's the campus at your university, inside your gym, inside the facility. That's a whole hell of a lot of different campus than when you leave. And the 7 guys that got it outside the facility. And that would be my concern. And they weren't being good or bad. You know, it's a summer, so there's not a lot of kids there. But that would be my concern, Seth. And that's my answer a little bit, because I was with you saying, hey, look, man, college campuses are best facilities, best doctoring. And I agree with that. But there's a lot more. There's 2 campuses. Let's put it that way.
Oh, I agree with it. And once they get outside their bubble, the secure bubble, you're right. They're at risk. So what they're going to have to do is, in a lot of ways, they're not going to have to be, you know, and I don't think all majority of students, they're not going to be able to be normal students. They're going to be able to go downtown and to what's the place you go in Bloomington?
Knicks.
Not going to be able to roll into Knicks. They're not going to be able to go to fraternity and sorority parties. They're not going to be able to do the things that they're going to have to be. I say it all the time, be comfortable being uncomfortable. That's a choice they're going to have to make because they know if they make a bad one, they could impact the rest of their team. So, you know,
Is it possible? I was thinking about this. You know, I think you and I are in agreement. You know, let's start this after Thanksgiving. Kids are off campus. Is it possible to say, all right, we're going to start this with kids aren't on campus and we're going to have a bubble? Can colleges have bubbles, or does that go against, you know, all of our colleagues, athletes' rights and all that kind of stuff? That was Billis on the phone. Blanked off because we were taking away some students' rights by putting them in a bubble in a college. But can you do that? Can you do that in a college?
100%. Here's my thing. If if they want to have college basketball until there's a vaccine or antivirus, in a lot of ways, why do you think, and not just basketball, not just football, even not just athletics, why do you think a majority of the people are taking online classes? They're putting themselves in a bubble. All right, so like, if the regular student body can put themselves in a bubble because they want to mitigate the chance of getting the virus, all right, then why couldn't you do the same thing in athletics? And I really believe that you could start practice November 1st. Scott Willard, Kevin Willard, we should have Kevin Willard on the show because his thing is you literally start practice and you actually move everything up. You don't move it back. You move it up so that you have a longer period of time between Thanksgiving break and when the students come back, which is usually the second week of January, where in essence, you're creating about an 8-week bubble. And if you're playing two games a week, maybe three games a week, all right, and you're keeping the athletes in the bubble and you're doing all the right things, that's a way to get through the season. And a lot of schools are bringing their students back later, actually, hoping that there's a vaccine. So, I mean, I think putting your players in a bubble, I think a lot of the players are going to put themselves, I think a lot of students are going to put themselves in a bubble.
I agree.
A lot of parents are going to say, you know what? Either you're taking a gap year or you're going to take your classes online.
No, I agree. I'm very curious. I don't know how you do football. I honestly don't. But
7-on-7, baby.
Yeah. No. All right. Let me go back to basketball and certain lists. All right. If you had to say right now, because there's a lot of uncertainty, even though right now, who's the number one team in the country?
If Tillman comes by, I'd be a toss up between Villanova. If they all come back, Michigan State.
Where would Kansas be in that?
Kansas loses Dope, but they got everyone else back. And they're going to lose Dotson too, right?
Yeah.
So, I think that's something that they've got to resolve. I think Baylor's going to be really, really good. And it all depends on, is Butler coming back? Is T coming back? Because they got dudes coming back.
I ask you this all the time, but I'm going to ask it different. Would you, as an NBA team, want to draft LaMelo Ball?
Well, Ben, before we get to LaMelo Ball, Kentucky, if they get Sar eligible, will be interesting because Boston is no joke.
And I feel Sar to be very, very – I did one of their games. I feel him to be very overrated. He's the best grad
transfer. You think he's too soft, right?
I just think – I think he's all right. He's good. He's fine, but I read something that said he's the best grad transfer ever, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, wait a second.
No, he's a fit for them.
He's a fit. So was the guy from Bucknell or wherever he came from, the shooter. Steesmar, whatever his name was. Yeah. But it's hard to fit
the in Steiner. A fit.
Yeah, your guy.
I love that guy. He's a nice kid. He always had a smile on his face.
Huh?
He was always happy. All right, what was your question? LaMelo Ball.
He's LaMelo like you and Ball me. He's always happy.
Yeah, he's always happy. LaMelo Ball is a freakish talent that I personally would not – the reward is not worth the risk. And it has not – like he's got incredible vision. He's got legitimate size. He's got great feel. His shot selection, can it get better? It could get better if he buys in and he blocks out the static. The circus that's around him, I think it'll be a 2-year, kind of like it was with his brother. It'll be a year and a half, 2-year, circus type atmosphere. And then obviously he pulled away from his dad and he stood on his own 2 feet and he worked with a shot doctor because remember his dad said, there's nothing wrong with a shot. A shot's fine. Right. But it wasn't fine. It was fine when there was no pressure. It wasn't fine when there was pressure and he was playing against like-size athletes and talent. So I think the guy's really talented. Me personally, there's more to talent. That's me.
You, speaking of more than talent, the poster child this year for, yeah, but he's the greatest guy ever, the best leader ever, is Cassius Winston. Would you draft Cassius Winston?
I would draft Cassius Winston. Cassius Winston at the end of the first round. He'll probably go in the second round like Jalen Brunson, and then people are going to go, damn, Jalen Brunson's good. He helps your team win. Damn, Cassius Winston helps your team win. He gets guys involved. He's a perfect second unit guard. He can play 24 minutes a game, get everyone involved, make enough shots, push it in transition. Like Michigan State's guys, who would have thought Brett Forbes would have been what he's become? All right? Who would have thought, I mean, even Gary Harris. I mean, those guys transition into the league. I at the end of the first round, I would definitely draft Cassius Winston in a New York minute.
All right, because he is the poster child, right? He's the guy. He's the poster child for we gotta not talent. We're drafting integrity. We're drafting toughness. We're drafting
We're drafting Malcolm Brogdon. We're drafting Mikal Bridges. We're drafting Jalen Brunson. We're drafting all these guys that we say. Well, I don't know. It is amazing how all those guys stick and the positive impact that they have on their teams. They're winning players.
I agree. I don't disagree, Seth. Wiseman, your number one pick?
I like Wiseman. I'm not sold on Anthony Edwards. I think he's a freak athlete. I think he's physically strong. I know he made all those shots against Michigan State. He doesn't have a great feel for the game. Now, I might be, people say, could he be Donovan Mitchell? I don't know. Maybe he can be Donovan. I'll tell you what I like. I like Tyrese Halliburton. I think he could be Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, the things they're talking about Halliburton, size, feel, look over the defense, read the defense, needs to get it off quicker. Well, Tyrese Halliburton, 6'5", PhD in ball screens, very good passer. You know, when I look at those guys at the top, I mean, I just think there's a lot of ifs.
I'm not a fan of Halliburton. I did two of his games. I was a big fan of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. But you're right. In fact, we're going to clip this, and I want you to crush me because you saw Ja Morant before Ja Morant was Ja Morant. But I'm just not a fan. I think he's weak. I don't think he's got anything special about him. Shoots it, then pass it good. I mean, I just don't. I wouldn't.
Who's this? Who are you talking about?
Halliburton.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm not that. I'm just. I thought he was. I don't know. I saw him against Iowa. He disappeared. I saw him against Auburn. He got foul trouble or hurt or so. I don't know. I'm not as. I should be more enthralled because he's 6'6", and all that. But I'm not really, not that enthralled. If you were an NBA, people ask me this all the time. If you're an NBA general manager and you had the fifth pick in the draft, all right, this particular year, fifth. Now, Wiseman may excite people. There may be guys that excite. But if you had the fifth or sixth pick in the draft, would you trade it? Would you try hard to trade it? Or do you think there's enough depth here in the draft that you're going to get somebody that can help your team no matter what position? Don't cop out with position either.
No, I would say it all depends on what you can get for it. I mean, here's the thing. If I had a young team and I could get a proven veteran, I would trade it quickly. Because here's the thing. It's the draft this year is like what my brother used to say, is like an NBA trade. You always know what you're getting rid of. You never know what you're getting. So, like, if you trade for a veteran player, you have an understanding. He has a pedigree and a history within the league, where you're taking basically a rookie, and it's basically you're drafting on potential. So do you want a proven commodity? If you can get a legitimate proven commodity that fits, or are you drafting on potential? There's no one at fifth. Someone might take LaMelo. I mean, Ball might go at fifth. The people, he might be a steal. Like, here's the thing. You get LaMelo Ball and you put him in maybe with the Warriors, with Curry and Thompson and Green and those guys. And they kind of grab him and say, this is how we act. This is how we do things. This is our expectation. This isn't going to be a clown show. Then you know what? Then maybe that's the best thing that could happen.
All right. Seth Greenberg, is anything, I get asked this all the time, and I said, actually, I would ask you and get your thoughts. This whole thing with Duke, the agent, the spurned agent, and Zion Williamson, is anything going to happen here?
Nada.
I agree.
At worst, they're going to settle.
Maybe.
Well, here's the thing. The whole thing is, can Zion Williamson get deposed? Can Coach K get deposed? Can whoever was involved in this recruiting process get deposed? Can the shoe companies get deposed to prove the point of this agent? Now, supposedly, I mean, they've shown documents that have been altered of some to some extent. So, you know, those people, they immediately lose credibility. I don't think it'll ever materialize to very much. On the other hand, do I think that the family monetized his celebrity, his appearances? Yeah, I do. There's no doubt about it. And he's not the only one. I think that's, you know, like I say all the time, everyone talks about name, image, and likeness. And, you know, I might be wrong, but name, image, and likeness, guys have been getting name, image, and likeness for the last 5 years. They've just been doing it in a different way. Like, if you don't think that a really, really good player, top five player, has a connection through his AAU coach to a money manager and an agent and other things that are going on, or a big-time AAU team isn't getting some type of kickback when they play these one-off games through promoters. I mean, name, image, and likeness has been going on in grassroots basketball since these guys were recognized as being good players.
Just so our listeners understand, when Seth started answering this question, we're on, I don't know, whatever you call it, Zoom or whatever. He closed his eyes. And when Seth closes his eyes, that means that this is something that he's either disgusted with or have given deep, deep thought to. All right, last thing, and it's a conspiracy theory. You ready? Greg Doyle, columnist for the Indy Star, came on my show and said, before the whole Lou Williams, you know, going to the strip joint thing.
Oh, they're good wings.
He said, I have a conspiracy theory that players, there was about five players, including Zion, that left the bubble for, quote, a family emergency. He said the family emergencies were all the NBA's way of saying they have COVID and had to leave the bubble to get right. Do you buy that conspiracy theory?
No, I don't want to judge someone saying that it's a family of a player that says it's a family emergency. I don't want to walk in someone else's shoes. I don't want to, you know what I mean? Like, but here's the deal. Yeah, the whole idea of saying, well,
I was
going for wings. Come on, man. Come on. I mean, yeah, that's just a lack of discipline. Well, I got a question for you.
Hold it.
I got a question for you. Here's the craziest question of the day. You ask all these questions. You think the bubble needs a strip club?
Yeah. What the hell?
That's the question. Hey. I want Taylor to chime in on this. Taylor.
Yeah, Taylor.
I mean, the bubble's supposed to. It's got barber shops. It's got everything and anything that the players could want. Do they need the strip club?
I think they do. I think it's, I'm surprised that they didn't put it in the union contract. I feel like it's like the strip clubs and NBAs are so tightly tied together. It's a way of life. I mean, how could they not have put it in there?
Yeah.
See, do you know that for a fact?
I don't know. I don't know that it's a fact, but it's certainly a perception. I'm not mad at Taylor for saying it, but all right, let me ask you this question, you two guys. Do you think if Lou Williams was getting carry out from the Capitol Grill or from Joe's Crab, would that change the perception of Lou Williams getting carry out and being the bad guy at the bubble?
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. It's 100%. I mean, like, here's the thing. That's not my thing. So I don't know anything about strip clubs. All right? I'm just 100% disclosure. But, I mean, come on, man. I mean, Capitol Grill, you go to eat and drink wine. Right? The other place, which I never understood, by the way, just, for, I mean, to watch. It doesn't make any sense to me. But anyway, I mean, yeah, I mean, totally. Now, I think the perception will be totally different. But look, this is going to be very hard for the players. I think the players are doing actually an incredible job from what I'm reading. And I think the league's done a good job of creating diversions for them. This just might be just one more diversion.
All right. What do you think, Taylor? Is it a different perception? Because the Wings were named after Lou Williams at that place. And supposedly the stages were closed when he went in there. He just went in for some wings, baby.
I
wouldn't have delivered to his hotel.
Yeah, I mean, if the Wings are named after him, he should have a little more sway, and they should, I mean, know to keep it under wraps that he's there. But it does pose a problem. I mean, like, I'm no expert myself, but a lot of skin on skin contact, a lot of, I mean, like, even just like, you know, a lot of particles in the air, I'm sure, a lot of sweat. So, it does cause a
particles.
Problem. Air, you know, the droplets that they keep talking about. But, real quick, apparently, just if he went to Capitol Grill and he someone saw him at the bar taking shots, I think that would be just as big a problem
as well. I agree with that.
What if supposedly he was just kind of in the lobby picking up wings? I think the strip joint, I think it makes it at least funny for sure, right? I mean, it gives a – but I think it makes it more nefarious to do it that way. I just think if he was going into – you know, whatever fancy restaurant, you know, he's close to, I don't think we would care as much. I really don't. But we got particles in the air, people.
I got a question. You're Doc Rivers. What's that conversation like?
Oh, man. I've read about this whole deal, and I'm a little bit on Lou Williams' side. Like, I'm outside the bubble. What? I guess they tell you don't go anywhere, don't do anything. If he was picking up wings, I'm like, J. Lou, man. Personally, if I was an NBA coach, I'd say, look, you did what you did. You got to pay the price. We're going to move on and hope everything, you know, you're smart enough not to have to pay it again. But you've been a little bit immature here. I would say that, but I wouldn't. If I were a pro coach, I'd say, man, have your agent call the GM. Well, you're ready in 10 days. I'm putting you in the lineup. I've learned my lesson about
that. I agree with that. I actually agree with that 100% in terms of that. 10 days in quarantine is a hard 10 days.
Yeah.
That's a hard 10 days.
I mean, hey, look, it's not Rikers Island, but it's still, it's 10.
No, you're at a resort, but you're in your room. I don't know what, I mean, is that totally in your room for 10 straight days?
Yeah. It's 10 days. Yeah. You're not running around with other people because quarantine, they don't want you around. You know, they got a little golf course there, so, you know, whatever, and they don't want you around. So, yeah, you're doing. I always said this, Seth and Taylor, if I got sentenced to 20 years in jail and I had to do it in a nice hotel and I could only leave the room for 1 hour a day, even though it's a nice hotel with Kate, that'd be impossible. You know, so 10 days in a hotel, Like I said, he not doing hard time,
what does he do for conditioning? Is there a place he can go that's quarantined that he can get shots up? Is there, I mean, like,
right?
You 10 days without anything. They put a treadmill in his room?
I would if I was Doc Rivers. I mean, but I don't know. I don't know. There'll be particles in the air.
Yeah, those particles get you every time.
All right. Hey, thanks everybody for listening. Seth, we got to get rated, right? How do we get rated?
There's only one rating for the world's greatest podcast, and that's a 5. So wherever you listen to your podcasts and download your podcast, make sure that once you do that, you will realize once listening that the world's greatest podcast only gets one thing, 5 stars.
Talk to you next week. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.